Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio, your one stop for creative inspiration. We have a terrific hour of ideas and tips for you today, so let's get to it. Here's your host, Pat Sloan.
Hello, I'm Pat Sloan, the host of American Patchwork and Quilting's magazine's podcast. It's All Quilting All the Time on Monday afternoons. I am really happy to have Rachel Hauser of Stitched in Color. I have been reading Rachel's website for many, many years. She's always so creative. She has all kinds of chat about quilting and sewing and fabric and more fabric and more fabric. She is just in love with fabric like I am, like you are. And so today she's going to come on and talk to us a little bit about what she does. And I'm really excited. Hi, Rachel.
I'm excited to be here too.
Yeah, this is so fun. Tell me first, give me a little backstory on how you got started sewing, because you started
because I had a bundle of Anna Maria Horner's Good Folks fabric coming to be a quilt. So
yes.
I had to make a quilt and then I was hooked. Yep.
Now, what I found, Rachel, as I was reading your sort of about page, and I didn't realize is that when you started sort of playing with fabric, you started writing about it almost immediately. What was enticing for you about writing about your journey?
Yeah, well, when I started sewing, I was actually already writing a blog for another business.
Mm.
And it wasn't sewing related at all, but when I sewed things, I'd occasionally drop in a post about it. And the feedback and even the advice I received from those readers was incredible. So as soon as I realized that this is something I was going to continue doing as a hobby, a friend encouraged me, and I did. I jumped in with my blog, Stitched in Color, because I wanted to be part of the online community to learn from people. And, you know, I hope maybe I'd be involved in a swap or a bee someday. So yeah, I jumped in. Blogging and writing has definitely become part of my identity and something I do on a regular basis.
Yeah, I love your writing. You're very thoughtful, Rachel.
Oh, thank you.
Now, let's talk a little bit about you know, some of the things that you do, because when I say you're thoughtful, it's because you do write a bit more. You just don't like show a bundle of fabric and go, oh, look, pretty fabric. You know, that's also good, but you tend,
good.
Yeah, it's always good, but you tend to, encourage people, you host things. What are some of the really, tell me one of your really popular events that you've hosted in the past couple of years.
Well, I think I started last year doing mosaic contests, and I've kept those up because my readers also love choosing fabric. I mean, that's what made me think of doing mosaic contests is, for me, my favorite part of sewing is definitely choosing the colors and then choosing the fabrics that I want to work with. So the mosaic contest that day, and then I'll collect a whole bunch more that create a kind of color story or a mood, and I'll craft a post with those images and words that I'm hoping will draw my readers into that color mood so they'll feel inspired to create a mosaic. And doing so is like just really good creative practice. I know that people learn by doing that process, and then, you know, they do a great job. We always have lots of entries, and then the winners actually get the fabrics that they chose in fat quarters. So it's been really fun, and I'll definitely keep that up.
Now, how can they find that at your site?
Oh, yeah. Well, at the top of my blog, there's some menus, and under the events tab, there's a section with my mosaic contest where I link to each prompt post, so the post where I gave them the inspiration, and that's how you can find the different ones I've done.
It's really fun, and people do have such a great time with it. I really like those. You know, you have like community, you like community, I like community online. And, one of the things is people say stuff to you, they write to you, you know, they ask you questions. Do they ever like, Rachel, do they ever say to you, you know, I'm just like really afraid to do this technique and, you know, that, you know, what do you tell them?
Sure. That definitely comes up, especially because I'm always trying new things, and then I'll hear from my readers in the comments, I'm scared, I'm nervous, and I hope that in my blog I just inspire people to always be brave to try new things. Since I came to sewing without a family background, no one in my family quilts. My mom's actually doesn't like sewing at all. She kind of raised me with a fear of the sewing machine. Yeah. She had a really bad one, though, so it's not her fault.
Yes.
So anyhow, since I don't have the background, I've just learned from blogs and from books, and I think I've come a long way in a few years, and it's just because I've tried. So I hope that I encourage my readers to see, like, look, if we just jump in, if we try something, the worst thing that can happen is we learn from our mistakes, mm-hmm. but no matter what, we have to learn. Like, if you try, you will learn, you will progress.
Right.
And that's what I try to bring to them and bring to my students in my classes.
Yeah, because you're always showing something new. Like right now, you're encouraging people to make a skirt with you. And a lot of quilters have never made clothing.
Right. Yeah.
So
that was actually something someone suggested. They're like, oh, I'd love to make a skirt. I've never made any garments. A friend of mine, a reader. Mm-hmm. And so I've had that on my list of things to do. And I love making skirts this time of year anyways. You know, it's a good thing to wear some of our favorite fabrics as well.
That's right. You know, you can't have, you probably have something on your shelf that you would wear. So it's, make it up, sew it up.
Totally,
yes.
Totally.
Now, your site is called Stitched in Color. You know, how do you feel about color? What is sort of your personal thoughts about it?
Sure. Yeah, and color is so personal, and it's an expression of a person. For me, I love an exuberant use of color with, like, lots of saturated colors, and I feel like that, for me, celebrates life. So I've been actually working in the last year on getting more color in my daily surroundings. Believe it or not, my house is kind of a lot of brown and a lot of brown everywhere, it seems like, a year ago. So when I kind of realized that, I've been working on making things around the house. I made these patchwork of wall curtains with Anna Maria Horner's walls last year, and they're in my dining room every time I walk through there. And if I take the time to really look at them, you know, I can't help but smile and just feel gratitude for the beauty in my life. So for me, color is, yeah, a celebration of life, and the more the better.
Oh, I love mm-hmm. one that you did that I thought I just loved because we're all talking about color. It was called mm-hmm. Color Intensive Workshop, and you wrote a little bit about why you were inspired to teach this. Can you tell me about it?
Sure. Well, I think that color is something my readers have long, like, identified with me, and they've really encouraged me that they appreciate my use of color. So when I started teaching classes, online classes, a couple years ago, people asked right away for a class about color. And I was hesitant because I thought, well, color is personal. You have to feel color and then express it. So who am I to tell anybody, you know, what to do with color? Mm-hmm. And so I took my time thinking about that, and I designed the class, the Color Intensive Workshop, to start with. Our first week was about color emotions and trying to draw them into, like, how do you feel about color? What does this color make you feel? And really exploring that before we got to basic color theory. And 5-week course, and as we went through, my students seemed to make a lot of new connections for themselves of what color meant to them, what they liked. And I could see in the mosaic contest that we did as part of our private course, mm-hmm. I could see them developing and just making more cohesive, exciting, you know, mosaics that seemed to say something and mean something, and they just felt more confident. So it was really exciting. It was wow, you can learn color, and it's really about learning who you are when you learn about color. So yeah, I was a very meaningful class for me, and one I am likely to be repeating next year. So looking forward to that.
Well, that's good. People can kind of hang out and see what you're up to there, if you what you're running. Now, we have, like, about a minute, Rachel. So tell me, you love scraps. That's one of the things we talked about before mm-hmm. the show. Can you give me a little tip about what you do and how you handle your scraps?
I keep them. That's important. I sort them by color and by sizes. So I've been in a scrap quilt mood lately, but I'm looking forward to seeing the new fabrics coming out soon.
Do you have a go-to block that you do over and over with your scraps, or do you experiment?
Oh, totally not. Yeah, I love, I rarely will make the same thing twice. So I'm still experimenting. There's so many great things out there and books as well. So I like to do my own thing or try other people's patterns. And I don't think I have a go-to anything at this point, except for the zigzag, like, quilt binding. That is my go-to finishing technique. I love to machine bind a quilt with a zigzag because it's so fast and durable. And that I can don't think I'll ever be walking away from.
And you have a tutorial for that on your website.
I do. Yep. That's a good one. In fact, I was just finishing a quilt today.
Ah, excellent. Well, Rachel, this has been so wonderful to have you come on and share. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
You can go visit Rachel at stitchedincolor.com.
Choose from more than 100 of your favorite patterns from American Patchwork and Quilting, Quilts and More, and Quilt Sampler, all available online. Buy downloadable patterns today at apqshop.com.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop, Tether, thread both onto a long pipe cleaner, and twist the pipe cleaner ends together.
Here's a special offer just for radio listeners. Get 2 full years of American Patchwork and Quilting delivered right to your door for less than half the cost on the newsstand. You won't miss an issue that's packed with never-before-seen projects from top designers, complete materials lists for all projects, and easy-to-use pull-out patterns and quilting diagrams. Subscribe today online and you'll also get a free downloadable pattern. Check it out. Go to allpeoplequilt.com.
Follow American Patchwork and Quilting on Pinterest to find ideas for bags, baby projects, pillowcases, storage and organization, and more. Visit Pinterest.com/APQ magazine to join the fun.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and I have the fabulous designer Janine Morrison on. Janine designs, I just love them. They're exuberant. They are full of life and detail. And I know Rachel must love them too because they're full of color. And so her designs are on many different products, one of them being fabric with Free Spirit. And I had a chance to talk to Janine at a show. We did a workshop together. And so I'm really excited to have her here to chat about fabric. So hi, Janine. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Pat. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited.
It's good to talk to you again. It's been a little while.
It has, yes.
So tell me your background, just a little short thing. Are you a painter? Is it more like drawing? Where do you come from there?
Well, I'm a lifelong doodler. I've been drawing, painting, and coloring all of my life. Mm-hmm. Just a little bit of everything, mostly self-taught. I took a few art classes in college, but most everything is self-taught. When I was very young, I know that I was told that I was really good for the parents to watch or grandparents to watch because they could give me paper and a pencil and I would just disappear for hours. I'm the same way right now. I just love to do all of that stuff.
So you can get lost in your just drawing. You start to draw and the hours just disappear.
They just disappear. It's the greatest thing. I mean, maybe not for getting other things done, but I love it. I would just sit down with a pad and paper or with my iPad.
Different products. And on your website, which is your name, JeneanMorrison.net. People can see, you know, about your work. But tell me some of the places besides fabric that your work is, because I read that you have things on Fisher-Price toys.
Well, I do. Yeah, I do a lot of different things, pretty much anything that people will let me put my artwork on. I'm game for that. I really love it. But I've done stationery, scrapbook kits, rugs, wallpaper, things like that. And with Fisher-Price, it was really cool. They have a snap-and-style doll where the doll's clothes just snap on the doll, and then you can exchange them and stuff. And I designed a bunch of patterns for the clothing for the dolls.
Ah, what
yeah,
fun.
It was
what
really fun.
So when did you first decide that or connect with Free Spirit to do your fabric?
This was back in 2008. I had explored, I was doing scrapbook kits at that time, also some stationery products, some gift wrap, and really, really wanted to get into fabric. Mm-hmm. And Free Spirit was my first choice. So I sent them a lovely presentation. I showed them about four or five different collections that I had in mind. And I sent it to them first. I didn't approach any other companies. And I heard back from them, and they really liked what they saw. So we began a relationship. That was 2008.
Oh, how fun. Just fun. Yeah, they're such good people. They've got great fabric.
Yeah. It's really great. And I submitted a bunch of work. The designs that I submitted were a little bit smaller scale than what some of the designers were doing at that time for Free Spirit. They really needed, they said they really liked the small scale. That's one of the reasons that they hired me. Mm-hmm. They really liked that and needed someone to sort of help fill out that ditzy category. So I fit perfectly.
Perfect. It's a serendipity. Yes. So what is your current...
That has just come out. It just started shipping at the end of April and the beginning of May. I'm really, really excited about it. It's a little different for me. I have some larger scale prints mixed in with... I've always continued to do the small scale because I really like that, and I know how good it is for quilting and crafting and everything. But I did mix some larger scale paisleys and florals in with this collection. Mm-hmm. So I think this one will be one of the first ones that can also sort of transition into home decor a little bit, along with its other uses.
I love the waterfall. What would it? It's like the print. What is it called? You call it arches.
Thank you.
I love it. That is so
thank
cool.
You
have it.
I love that print. I had fun designing it, and I designed a free quilt pattern for the collection, and I used that as the border. It just looked really,
yes,
really cool.
It does, because it looks like somebody did a lot of applique or some sort of massive amount of work, and it's just your beautiful drawings. So I love it. It's so cool.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. And your paisleys are awesome because you put a whole lot of detail, because you love to sort of, it's just like you just don't have the paisley shape. It's filled with detail and flowers and scroll work. It's how do you do that? What is your sort of thought when you start to build like a paisley like that?
Well, one of the things that I'm always thinking about with my fabric is I'm always thinking about quilting. That is the main application, quilting and sewing, that they go into. And with the paisleys and designs like that, like, I really want to, even if it is a large scale element, I want to make sure that that element is filled with detail, so that if people cut it up, there's still, you know, lots of detail, lots of little flowers inside the big motif. So that's sort of what I think about with that particular kind of print.
Ah, well, that makes a lot of sense because, yeah, if you put a 2-inch square, what's going to be in it? You don't want just background. It's like...
Right. So I always try to make sure even my backgrounds are often rich and textured, just to make sure that there's something, you know, people could use every little scrap if they wanted.
Oh, good. They love that. They'll have to use all the scraps up, right? Yeah. So do you, when you start, Janine, do you have like a storyboard for the whole line? Let's say, like, what's the next line that'll be coming out after this one?
Well, I have one. It's called Star Landing. And I do not have a storyboard. So the way I sort of work is I have collections that are due twice a year, 6 months apart. And over the course of those 6 months, I'm always designing. I'm always doing patterns because I do have other products that I'm doing them for.
Right.
So when it comes time to submit or get a collection together, I sort of look through all the work that I've done in the previous few months and see what stands out, what, you know, appeals to me. And then it's sort of a matter of gathering. I that way I'm able to look at the designs and make sure I still like them a few months later, or make sure they're still powerful and still resonating with me. And then I'm comfortable, you know, sending them to Free Spirit. Because sometimes you do something and you may think it's great in the moment, and then you look at it a week later and think, what was I thinking? So I like to give myself plenty of time to sort of build the collection together and make sure everything works really well, and then, you know, start putting things together and send it in.
Oh, okay. Yeah, everybody's process is so different.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I know. I've thought a lot about trying to start from a storyboard or something like that, but I just, it's more of a collection for me.
Yeah, so so I just think that's incredible because it works for you, and that's what's the fun part is. Now you have a basics line now.
I do. I'm so excited about this. This is the True Colors line for Free Spirit, and this was really, really fun for me because my favorite prints to design are, I did with this collection, small scale. I wanted to make sure they fit really well into quilting. I love to do prints with one or two colors. Love to do an all-over print, which is much more time-consuming than those that are just sort of stacked or in rows. Like, I like to toss the elements around. And it was really great. I'm so glad I got to do that. And I was with Heather and Anna Maria and Joel Dewberry. Like, we all sort of worked together on some of the promotion and stuff for it. So it was really fun.
Now, since there's four of you that came out under sort of the same umbrella name of, what was the name of it again? I've just lost it.
True Colors.
True Colors, right. So the True Colors. Yes. Now, do your colors, if you have purple, do the other three people have purple? Or are you the only one with purple? How did they set that up?
Well, they let us each sort of do our own interpretation of True Colors. I do think that, once we had all submitted them into Free Spirit looked at the whole collection, the whole grouping, what all four of us had sent in, and tried to make sure there weren't things that infringed on each other's sort of designs or things that were too similar. But I got to pick, just tried to draw from past collections and put in, things that would work with my current collections, the ones I have coming out in the future, just things that would be basic and work with everything.
It's a really fun idea and fun that there's that sort of common thing between four different designers having this come out at the same time. I like that. Always something different.
It was really fun and exciting to see what they were bringing too. Because I was sitting here sort of working in a bubble, and then I was so excited to see how they interpreted the design instruction and the theme and stuff.
Yeah. Now tell me a little bit about your coloring books. They're fun.
Well, my coloring books, I'm so excited about my coloring books. They're so much fun to design. And I started designing them in August of 2012, and I published them myself. They're available on Amazon, and they're coloring books that are filled with patterns and designs that I design, for my fabrics. So it's really interesting and fun for me to see. I have a lot of people on Instagram that will show me how they colored particular designs. And as a designer, you never get to see anyone else's idea of what colors would go with your with your pattern. So it's really cool. It's really fun. And they're sort of for older kids. They're quite detailed. But I'd say older kids and adults, probably adults are the main people who are buying them. But I really, really enjoy it.
I loved coloring books as a, in college, I had things that I colored in, and it was very meditative. It was sort of like
meditative. And I think a lot of people use them for that. And I've colored all my life. And so I'm designing coloring books that I would like to color.
Right. Oh, they're fun. You have how many now?
I have four out now. I just put out a flower designs coloring book earlier this year. And I was specifically thinking, buy your mom some flowers for Mother's Day. and maybe this is a new interpretation of flowers.
That's right. And a new box of crayons, right? So fun. Thank you for being here.
Yeah, thank you. You're the greatest. I appreciate this so much.
Oh, everybody visit Janine at JanineMorrison.net. We'll be right back.
Boost your sewing skills from start to finish with daily tips from the editors of American Patchwork and Quilting. Visit tips.allpeoplequilt.com for inspiration. This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. Set yourself up to stitch a little every day. When you finish stitching, before putting everything away, rethread your needle and take the first stitch.
Then the next time you pull out your project, you'll be ready to sit down and start stitching.
Make the most of your sewing machine by watching Machine Minute videos brought to you by BabyLock. Learn about popular topics like tension troubles, stitch length, needles, buttonholes, zipper basics, and more. Watch these videos at allpeoplequilt.com/videos.
Take an ultimate shop hop tour of 11 top quilt shops. You'll find them all in the current issue of Quilt Sampler, available now at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. Sarah Lawson is joining me today for us to talk again. She's been on before. She's a fabulous designer, a lot of bag design. She does all kinds of amazing things on her website, sewsweetness.com. And she has a new fabric line, which I'm so excited about. So she can come on and talk about that. So Sarah, welcome back to the show.
So much for having
me. Fabric. Tell me the name of it.
Okay, the line is called Jungle Avenue. It's for Art Gallery Fabrics, and it's coming out next month in June.
Yay! Are you excited?
I'm super excited. It sort of feels like a dream come true, I feel like I'm still dreaming. It doesn't seem real.
It doesn't seem real. Did you, like, wrap yourself in the fabric when it showed up? I did that on my first line. I wore it around the house.
I laid it all out on the floor and, like, looked at it for the longest time. It was great.
I know. It's like you can hardly believe your name is on there, that all the work that you did finally ended up in print. It takes a while.
Yes, definitely.
So this, you are from Chicago because you are my connection that got me my Chicago mug for the project I'm doing this year with Every City. And so your theme for your fabric line is Chicago. How did you go about interpreting that into fabric? What were you thinking?
Well, I've always lived in Chicago, and somehow I wanted to connect them. So I think it's a really good combination of prints and...
Okay, now explain for many, many people, we don't associate elephants with Chicago.
Right.
Why do you? Because you actually live there. So obviously, we should all know more about elephants and Chicago.
Well, I mean, we definitely have a great Lincoln Park Zoo down by the lake, and so obviously they have elephants there. But I wanted to stick with the urban jungle theme. A lot of people in the city that live in small apartments still have a chance to have small gardens, maybe rooftop gardens, planters. And so I wanted to keep those themes together, and I hope the line expresses that.
It's really, really fun. I mean, that print is sort of a bit, maybe a tiny bit retro too with it, with the way
I totally agree. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because you've got this kind of swirly, maybe like rainbow type thing behind with the cityscape and the elephants, this sort of rainbow part for you.
The rainbow looking designs was sort of meant to be kind of rolling hills, because behind the elephants I have hills and clouds, and so I just thought it had a very organic feel to it.
It does, because it's not a rainbow, but it's like you would have the different levels. So there's like ovals, going out with different colors. So you do have black in there, because I guess everybody thinks, and I do too, it's like anything urban, it's like there is a lot of black in a city, from the different parts. And yours has, you have some with dots on it. I love that print with the dots. Tell me about that one.
Thank you. Yeah, that polka dot print, it's a black background with white polka dots, but they're not solid white. They sort of have, I used a special paintbrush to sort of make texture on top of the white dots. Mm-hmm. So I think polka dots are one of my favorite things to use in lots of different projects. And so I knew I had to have a polka dot, but I didn't want to just have a regular
texture in them. And it's really cool. So how many pieces are in the line?
There's 8 in quilting cotton. There's 1 print in voile, and there's 2 in knit.
Ah, so because you do clothing, so you got some knits to make.
Right. It's a lot of fun using the different fabrics in clothing. Besides, I usually like to use the quilting cotton, but having the voile and the knit option is really great. Mm-hmm. And of course, all the art gallery fabrics always have a great feel to them. So they feel really great and soft, and the colors are bright.
So when this was your first line that you designed, did you have any kind of hurdles with learning how to design fabric?
Yeah, I actually had to learn the software. So I used Adobe Illustrator. I actually hired a tutor to come a couple of times and walk me through the basics. And, of course, Pat Bravo, she's the owner and art director of Art Gallery Fabric. She helped me out a ton. She spent so many hours with me.
The show. You always get, like, big hugs, right? She's a she likes to give big hugs. So, let's see. We were going to talk a little bit about thread, because you also have a collection of 40 weight thread with Aurifil that matches your fabric colors. 40 weight is a little bit heavier than 50 weight. So why did you pick that?
I chose the 40 weight because, I've used 50 weight and 40 weight in my bags, but mm-hmm. I like having the 40 weight as a stronger option. Some of my bags have a lot of layers with all the fabric and the interfacing. One of my patterns actually has 8 layers of fabric and several layers of interfacing. And I like having the 40 weight Aurifil because it creates a really strong bind on the seams. And so when the bag's finished, I don't see a ladder of stitches on the outside of the bag like I used to have with the cheaper threads I used to use. So it's great for bags. It's great for clothing. And it also looks great for quilting on quilts. So mm-hmm. it has a lot of uses to it.
Yeah, 40 is an awesome weight. It's just people don't realize, you know, what the little bit of difference of thickness can do for them. It's just mm-hmm. it's really nice. Let's talk about your seams. You were telling me that you have a little technique for your bag seams that you could share with me.
Yeah, some of my larger bags, I construct them so that when the bag is almost finished, there's raw edges on the inside of the bag. And I like to use bias tape actually to finish those raw edges. And I use Wonder Under or another tape to finish that seam by machine. So it doesn't have to be hand sewn and it doesn't have to look perfect because it's on the inside of the bag in the creases. If your stitching goes off a little bit, that's totally fine. As long as the outside of the bag looks great, you're good to go.
Yeah. Yeah, it's always good to look good on the outside. It's
right.
Like, yeah, the bag on the outside. So if somebody's going to be constructing like that, do they need to use their walking foot when they're doing that, or does it matter?
I recommend that as an option. I personally just use my regular presser foot when I'm sewing bags. I guess I like to walk a little bit on the wild side and just, you know, use my regular materials for that. But, yeah, you definitely can use the walking foot to help you along.
Okay. Yeah, because I know some people have a problem with where it starts to get thick and, you know, maybe their machine isn't quite as powerful. And
right.
So that walking foot will feed it from top and bottom and help it ease through a little bit better. Now, you mentioned interfacing, and I know that you've talked about that in the past, but I really don't, you know, with me, but I don't think we can get enough information about interfacing because not all of us make bags as much as you do. So what have you been working with recently for interfacing?
I've been doing a lot of lectures for quilt shops and guilds, and when I do a lecture on interfacing, I charm pack of interfacing that I've cut out of everything that I use. So the charm pack has 11 items in it and they're all labeled. So after the talk, you don't have to remember which is which because they're pretty much all white. but they're all labeled so people can go home. They can take the charm packs along in their purse. So when they go to the quilt shop, they can find the right interfacing for their project. And I think it's great to expose people to a variety of different interfacings. I never assume people know too much. Sometimes they don't even know where to purchase the items, and most
right.
of them are Pellon, either Pellon or the Buy Any Soft and Stable interfacings in there. And so mm-hmm. I just like spreading the word and things that I've learned through making bags for the last few years. I like telling people what I personally use. And I always tell them, you know, feel free to experiment. There's no right or wrong answer, and you'll find what you like, and then you can continue using that.
So what are you using, like, for bags that you want to be really, really firm? So they're almost like, you know, like what you would buy in a store versus really soft, like batting type.
For a nice firm bag, I like to use Pella and Peltex, which is their number 70, and it's a sew-in interfacing. I like to cut that a half inch smaller than the actual pattern pieces to reduce the bulk in the seam allowances. And what I'll do is I'll cut an additional piece of woven interfacing, which Pellon's product is called ShapeFlex, and I will use that to seal the Peltex to the wrong side of the fabric. And so it'll still be attached, but the seam allowances will be reduced, so you won't have any bulk. And so for a firm bag, that's what I would do.
Okay, so you like...
creased looking, which is why I prefer to use the Peltex sew-in product, because after the bag is finished... just a little bit of ironing will help smooth it out, but that fusible product, ironing after the bag is finished, doesn't do a lot to help get the creases out. So
that's a good point. I didn't really think about the fact that you sort of ruch it around in the under the machine, and you can't really get it back smooth again.
Right.
So what did you design to go with your fabric line? What can people look for?
I made a whole variety of different projects, because even though I generally mostly write bag patterns, I don't want people to think, oh, her fabrics are only good for bags. And so,
right. You
know, I did make my bags. I made some clothing, and there's a whole bunch of new quilts that I'll have in my booth next week at Quilt Market. Some of them are patterns that I've written. Some I've had friends write patterns for them, and so I think it's an interesting array of different projects that'll be shown in my fabrics.
Yay! It's always good to see them made up, and how the person who designed them, plus then how other people take it. So that's really nice that you have some friends who interpreted and created some designs using your fabric. Very cool.
Yep.
And so your fabric, once again, is Urban Jungle with Art Gallery, and they can see it at your site, sewsweetness.com, right?
Yes. Yep.
Yay. So thank you, Sarah, for coming on and sharing your process for your first fabric line. Congratulations.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me on your show, too.
Yeah. We're going to be right back after this break to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan.
Looking for fresh, simple, and fun projects and ideas? Check out the current issue of Quilts & More magazine at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. To maintain consistency when piecing, keep your eye on the spot where the needle enters the fabric, not the needle going up and down.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Keltner, Executive Editor of American Patchwork and Quilting, and I'd like to invite you to join me in making a pillowcase and making a difference. It's easy. Make and donate pillowcases in your local community. Use your favorite pattern or choose from one of the free patterns at allpeoplequilt.com. Whether you sew pillowcases with a group or by yourself, you can help someone less fortunate. You could donate them to a women's shelter, boys or girls club, homeless shelter, veterans home, or any other organization you know of in need. Once you donate the pillowcases, log on to allpeoplequilt.com. Click on the box in the upper right-hand corner for the 1 million pillowcase challenge and enter the number of pillowcases you created to our national tally. We know quilting changes everything, and we're out to show the world just how much quilters care. Please join the American Patchwork and Quilting 1 million pillowcase challenge. We're counting on you.
See what other quilters are up to on the American Patchwork and Quilting page on Facebook. Simply go to facebook.com and search for APQ Magazine.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat This month's topics to talk about with Nancy Mahoney are pressing. What's our big one? Pressing. So Nancy and I were talking about, well, what can we share? What can we talk sort of like deep dive into? And we both thought that the topic of how you press your fabric would be a really good one to explore. So quilt designer, amazing fabric designer, Nancy Mahoney is with me. Hi, Nancy. Welcome back.
Hi, Pat. How are you today?
I am good. I think, you know, pressing, when we both sort of like, you know, we should talk about this, because do you remember that there used to be a book, like a little booklet years ago, all about pressing your fabric? Do you remember that one?
I do.
I owned it at one point, but I couldn't find it recently. So I just couldn't believe that somebody wrote a whole book, but there's that much information, isn't there?
There really is. There really is, especially when it comes to pressing for quilts. It's different than ironing clothes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, ironing and pressing. Why don't you tell the difference between the two? Because people, we use the term interchangeably.
Well, ironing, particularly if you're doing something like you're ironing yardage, you're kind of moving the iron back and forth in a sweeping motion.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're pressing blocks or pressing a quilt top, you want to be moving your iron up and down. You don't want to be moving it too much from side to side, because that can stretch the grain on the fabrics.
Right. And fabric has, I always say fabric has a life of its own. It is movable. It's not like a piece of wood. It shifts. And so when you are ironing, you are pushing it. And it, you know, and you have steam, which is like softened all the fibers, right?
Correct.
Yeah. So when you're pushing it, then you could pull it out, you could stretch it. So what are a few of the tips for pressing? How should we go about for good block? Let's talk about a block first, you know, or the parts of a block for pressing them.
Well, I like to press on a firm surface to start with. And I think that's one of the first things you need to think about is what is your ironing surface like? Is it really soft and kind of spongy, or is it really firm and much harder, like there's no padding at all? Mm-hmm. And my ironing surface is really a board with a piece of thin batting, and then I've covered it in some lightweight canvas. So it's really, really firm.
Oh.
And that way I can get a nice firm press on when I'm pressing my blocks and my units.
Right. Now, you know, when we go to workshops, like foldable, soft fabric pressing sheets, you know, like they have like a silver on one side. And, you know, they're like a little portable ironing mat,
right,
or something. But those are really soft, aren't they?
They are. They are.
Yeah.
And you're not going to get a really nice, crisp seam when you use those.
No. How about the ironing boards? Like, I have right now an ironing board that I haven't repadded it myself, but I will soon. But it has the grid work underneath, you know, like a typical metal ironing board. Do you find that sometimes people are, you know, they're telling you that they're ironing, but they can sort of see that grid work coming through?
Yes. Yes.
So,
and I don't know how to get beyond that, except maybe put a board on top of it.
Mm-hmm. If you put a lot of batting under there, this is what I've done. I've actually taken some of the really thick cotton bats. I've layered like three pieces under the cover of my board. And so I didn't have to cut a piece of wood, but you could cut a piece of wood too and put
it
under there.
And there are companies that make they're a board that you could put on top of your ironing board,
mm-hmm,
and they give
mm-hmm.
you a more of a square surface so that it's not wide at one end and skinny at the other end.
Yes. Yes. I've had those too. Unfortunately, my space got like reallocated. I gave that to my girlfriend. So I don't have it, but I do miss it, because those are wood with, just like you made for yourself, wood with then batting and then your cover. So let's talk about steam versus no steam. So chat with me on that, Miss Nancy.
I'm a no steam girl. I really am. You know, years ago, I had an iron that leaked water, and I loved that iron, but it was leaking water. And so before I bought a new one, I did some research on it, and they really said, no matter how much you spend for an iron, it will eventually leak.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't want your iron to leak, then you need to drain the water out and make sure it's completely dry after you use it each time.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, you know, that's way too much work for me. So I quit putting water in my iron, and I really found that I liked it better. I liked my results from pressing better, mm-hmm. because when you use steam, as we talked about earlier, you're heating up your fabric, and you're getting it just a little bit damp,
mm-hmm.
and that can stretch those that grain. That can stretch your units or stretch your blocks out of shape, and you don't even intend to do it, but that steam will cause that to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So I just use a dry iron now.
Well, do you use a heavy iron?
I use one that's a little bit heavier than mm-hmm. the average iron.
Mm-hmm.
But I also have a lighter weight iron so that if I'm doing a lot of applique, particularly fusible applique,
mm-hmm.
I can switch over to my lighter iron, and it's a little bit, you know, easier on my arm and my hand
right.
to use.
As well, when I go to, like, you know, workshops and people bring, like, to class, you know, just the sort of inexpensive irons because they're coming to class, and it's like, oh, I miss the weight of
mm-hmm.
that pressing. So let's talk about setting the seam, because I think this is the step that a lot of people just haven't learned. You know, nobody showed it to them, told them why it's important to set your seams in your blocks before you press them open.
Right, and it really does help. If you will, when you've just sewn your pieces and you're taking them over to be ironed and they're still wrong sides together, if you just press along that stitched line, and it just takes a really little brief pressing, it will smooth it out. It kind of sets the thread down into the fabric a little bit, so it sets the seam, and it warms the fabric up so that then when you open the fabrics so that they're both right sides up, you can mm-hmm. finger press the top fabric over the seam allowance, and then you can just lay your iron down on top of it.
And so you will repress again from the front?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I always do my final pressing from the front because you really don't want to put any little tucks in.
Right.
In along that seam line. That can affect your accuracy
mm-hmm.
as much as if you don't sew an accurate seam allowance.
Right, because I mean, I know, like, I could just vividly remember years ago, you know, going and realizing that I actually have a fold where the seam was because
right.
I didn't get the block all the way over, and I thought I did because I pressed the seam in, and so visually, you know, I didn't notice until I was sewing, and then it was too big because I'd squared it up to the wrong size, and, you know.
And I see that in class a lot, too, when I'm teaching. That, you know, they'll say, well, why is this block not the right size? And we look at the seam allowance and we look at the piece, the size that it's cut. But then when we check and see how it was pressed, there'll be a little tuck there, and mm-hmm. that affects the size of the block.
So now that we have, we sort of do that, you know, light and dark, shadowing of your seams, how do you sort of think through which direction to press?
Well, most of the time, kind of the golden rule is you always press to the dark. And that's the sort of the seam allowances lay under the darker fabric. Mm-hmm. And that's what I learned. When I started quilting, that was kind of what everybody did. You press towards the dark fabric.
Right.
And some of that has changed a little bit over the years. I still do that when I can, and that's my first choice is to press mm-hmm. it that way. If, however, I'm sewing like a plain strip, to a pieced block or to a pieced unit, I'm going to press towards that plain strip because there's less bulk that way. And I'm probably not going to cut off the tips of my triangles or the points on my block if I press it towards that unpieced strip or rectangle or square or whatever it is.
Right, right.
But unfortunately, that means that sometimes you're going to have shadowing under a light colored piece. So you can, what's called grade your seams, and that comes back from my garment making background. It's called grade your seams.
Right.
And you just trim the seam allowance, that's the colored part or the print
mm-hmm.
part that's going to show. You just trim it two or three threads. It doesn't even have to be an eighth of an inch. It's just a small amount so
mm-hmm.
that the lighter color extends beyond the darker color.
Yeah, so that's just a visual thing then. It'll sort of shove that. So if you've got a black and white fabric or red and white fabric and you need to have the red seam underneath, just get it so that it's less of it, just a little tiny bit.
Just a little tiny bit. Yeah.
Right, yeah.
it's like you would have maybe a 16th of an inch or less that you're going to trim off. And sometimes I can even, you'll have a few threads that are kind of fraying a little bit. I'll just pull on those and remove those, and that'll give me enough to where the bulk of that color, the red or the black, whatever color it is underneath, but will show through the white.
And some white fabrics are thicker. The fabric itself is thicker, so you don't see it as much. And some are thinner fabric. So, you can test that in advance. First of all, let me tell everybody, if you go to allpeoplequilt.com, American Patchwork Magazine's website, and you just put in pressing, the word pressing in the search, you can come up with a lot of what we're talking about today. Plus, there's some videos out there. But what I wanted to ask you, Nancy, was do you plan, let's say you have a block that has a lot of pieces, do you ever think through and plan your pressing before you get all the units done so you know in advance which way you're going to go?
I do. And I'll even mark it on my, I'll print out my block or, because I work on the computer a lot designing my blocks, if I've got a printout of my block, I'll draw arrows on my piece of paper so I can remember which way I'm pressing my seam allowances as I'm working through my block. And there have been times when I thought, well, I'm going to press this a certain direction, and then as I started to put the units together, I realized I had pressed it in the wrong direction. And it would have made it easier, because what our goal is to create opposing seams.
Right.
And if I had pressed it, the other direction, I would have opposing seams. So I'll go back and I always keep because I don't use steam, I always keep a water bottle handy, so I can spritz, a little spray bottle, and I'll just, spritz those units so that they're flat again, press them flat again, and then repress them in the other direction. And it's worth taking the time to do that because it can really make your block come out so much easier and look so much better. And make the construction so much easier.
So, Nancy, this has been incredible. We have talked the entire segment on pressing.
Well, and there's still more to discover, really. I know. I'm open sometimes, too. So
I know. We'll have to do it again. Visit Nancy at nancymahoney.com. Thanks for being here, Nancy. We'll talk to her next month again. This is America.
Remember to visit allpeoplequilt.com for more information on topics from today's show, as well as how-to videos, free printable patterns, and additional tips and techniques. Thanks for listening.